This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I am Mira Sefisodi. In our health and living segment today, we are discussing how COVID-19 has changed palliative care. Now, while COVID-19, the pandemic, has sort of highlighted issues faced by various healthcare specialties, not much has been discussed when it comes to palliative care. Now, in some countries, this whole idea of palliative care has been in the forefront of COVID-19. However, we don't hear very much about it here in Malaysia, how we're managing that. So on the line with me is Dr. Ednin Hamza, CEO of Hospice Malaysia. Welcome, Dr. Ednin. How are you today?
I'm fine. Thank you for inviting me to the show, Mira.
Absolutely. You're most welcome. I mean, I think this is an area which has very much been ignored. Why do you think that's been the case? Is it because traditionally palliative care is something that Malaysians don't really want to acknowledge or even accept to a certain extent? What do you think?
I think it still comes to awareness. People don't really know what palliative care is yet. So it's like asking a patient, what you want, you know, they ask for palliative care. And one patient had said to me before, how can I ask for someone I don't know exists?
Right.
So palliative care is something that people don't normally think about. So I guess it's sort of forgotten in a way. But it is really something that is very, very well suited in dealing with this COVID-19 pandemic.
Why is that?
Because we're dealing with caring for people in the midst of uncertainty. All our patients that we care for are patients with life-threatening illness, patients with advanced cancer, organ failures. They have symptoms, they have issues. They do not know what the next day would be. So they are always living in a situation where they're balancing hope for improvement with fear and anxiety about things that may happen to them. So our specialty is very much geared to how we communicate, how we alleviate fear and anxiety into hoping for the best, but also planning for the worst. So it's actually very well put together in dealing with something like this.
Well, what were some of the challenges you faced during this whole MCO period?
I guess most of the challenges we face are logistics. When this virus started sort of rearing its head in China in January and February, and we were still not in lockdown, I guess we were starting to think, now, will it come to Malaysia? And what we tried to do was to stock up on some medications beforehand. In February, we started trying to get as much medication as we can. We really did not really look at the issue of PPE at that time.
Yeah.
But when the main thing that came out was when the first lockdown was put in place in March. And that really created a lot of difficulties as to how we would be able to function. Firstly, we were not really sure whether the Ministry of Health would think that palliative care is an essential service, especially in the community. Everything was focused on hospital with intensive care, having respirators, PPE and other things in the hospital. And that was seen as the front line.
So did they in the end recognize it as an essential service?
They did. But okay. Initially, the first week was really with some confusion. We needed clarification that we would be allowed to operate, that we would be able to get past roadblocks. And that's where we encountered some problems as to the police are saying, who are you? What is this hospice palliative care thing?
Yeah.
So that really made us was able to see how much people did not know what palliative care was.
Yeah. And also, I'm just not talking about referring to hospice, your hospice centre, but as you said, in the community, there are many people who are managing patients with for palliative care. How did they cope at home?
I think you've got to look at both from the patient and families as well as from the healthcare provider. And I think that brings up many, many questions. The whole issue of social distancing, I disagree with it. I think that the word social distancing is wrong. And then there are a few comments from my colleagues around the world. What we really are talking about is physical distancing. We're asking people to have a physical distance. But the social connection is so very important. It's what makes us human. And by asking people to stay away and not addressing how do we still keep connected, we are depriving people of the very thing that allows them to feel human. And that's where families need to feel connected to their loved ones. It's healthcare workers need to feel that they belong in an environment of care and support so that the people that are going out to see patients do not feel isolated in themselves. Somebody is still looking for them. So in one of the things that we did was that even though our teams go out to see patients in the community, it was important for us to meet physically daily in order to debrief and support each other.
So how did that physical distancing pan out with, palliative care, healthcare workers going out to the community? How did they socially support members, patients, family members, and even friends?
I think that's where the issue of communication becomes very, very important. How do you communicate through a mask? How do you show emotions when you have a mask? And that's where the palliative care training comes in quite a bit. In sort of using non-verbals, your posture, your voice, your tone, the words, the eye contact, giving empathy, giving space becomes very, very important in showing that you are still connected and supportive, even though you are staying a distance away, that you're not as close as you would normally be, to make sure that people still feel supported, making sure we have both phone contacts as well as physical contact.
And when it comes to these ways of communicating, did palliative care workers sort of try and educate caregivers at home how to actually communicate? Because, caregivers could also be a potential of getting infected by this virus and transmitting that back to the patient who's going through the palliative care. What was your advice to caregivers and how to not be distant with the patient?
I think from the caregiver side, there were a couple of issues. One was the public itself, certainly some are very, very afraid, but some actually do not want to see anyone else. So that they don't really want contact with anyone else. They want it to be isolated. But in the other aspects of how they would be able to be in touch with others, that's where we need to teach them how they could still maintain social contact with loved ones, whether it's from the phone, whether it's using video conferencing. That would be the main aspect, I guess. People feel isolated at home. Their friends, their families can't visit them. And that's where the idea of how do we educate them on what to communicate, how to communicate, what may be the important things you could discuss comes into it.
What have been concerns that you've heard of from patients and their family members?
I think it's not being able, it's the physical visits, children not being able to see their parents and helping out with caregiving. There are many, many patients out there who depend on family members who come in to look after them. They maybe sometimes do rotas to visit their loved ones. Doing physical acts of care, that has been really one of the most difficult challenges in how households that really doesn't have very much support and how they could cope. If, for example, you have two elderly people in the house and normally the children come to visit them and help, and in this situation, they can't visit. And these two old people will have to develop skill coping by themselves. That has been quite challenging. It has also been difficult for them to get outside help. Private nurses and others are much more difficult to access. For those that may want to go into care homes, many care homes refuse to accept new patients during this period. So they are very much on their own sometimes.
We'll come back and find out where all of this, where you see all of this going, Dr. Ednin, because COVID-19 is expected to remain for at least the next year, if not even more. How are we going to address some of these issues? That's coming up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome back. It's our Health and Living segment. Dr. Ednin Hamza, CEO of Hospice Malaysia, on the line with me. We are discussing how COVID-19 has changed palliative care. We've gone through a couple of things, Dr. Ednin, as in your challenges when the MCO came into play, and you mentioned logistics was one of the main concerns. You couldn't get past roadblocks and all of that. But, you know, government sort of later recognized palliative care as an essential service. And so things got a little better for you. You disagree with the whole word social distancing, which I am inclined to agree with you. It is physical distancing that we're talking about, because the word social itself can be isolating, and hence the reason why, you know, we saw a spike in mental health issues just in the general population during the MCO. What more with palliative care patients as well as caregivers? You've spoken about the provision of medication. Is that still a problem? Is it still ongoing, Dr. Ednin? Do you still have problems accessing the medication for patients?
Many of the hospital operations have been disrupted during this period. Appointments cancelled and various other things. And what has happened is some of our patients have had interruptions to their care in hospital. And although there have been provisions to try and improve this, and provisions for medications have tried to be sorted out in some hospitals, there are still some gaps, especially with some of the more controlled drugs that some of our patients are needing. The other part would then be that there is a significant number of patients who and their family who are quite afraid of going to hospitals. So they try and make sure that their supplies of medication last as long as possible at home, thereby maybe not taking the amount of medication that they would normally be taking and trying to ration that. So what we have tended to do is try and supply extra medication to our patients as much as we can, which itself also depletes our stocks. So that has been certainly an issue. And I guess this needs to be improved over the next several months or so as we keep going forward. I think there has to be greater confidence in our patients that their healthcare needs in hospitals will be met, that they can safely go back to hospital.
Yeah, I think one of the consoling points, I suppose, is if you try and understand healthcare workers who were infected with the virus. I think most of them have been infected in the community and not really in the hospital. So that is sort of telling in a way that, you know, it's okay. You can still go to the hospitals and get care or even medication if you need that. Do you not see telemedicine coming into play as far as the supply of medicines are concerned, Dr. Ednin? As in, I think there are some services where you can put in your orders online and get the medication sent, delivered to your home. Do you think that would be one option?
I think certainly telemedicine has its uses. It is useful for communication. But I think that there are some gaps in telemedicine that you still need the physical contact. The kind of medication that some of our patients require are some controlled medications that they have to be physically collected. They will not be sending them by the post. Controlled drugs are quite dangerous to be sending them by the post. So they have to collect it physically. The other aspects is that telemedicine can help you diagnose, can help communicate. But many of our patients still need physical care, for example, wound dressing, changing nasogastric tube catheters. They need a physical person there. So that doesn't help in every situation, but it can help to do some counseling, for example, to help communication. It can help to address specific goals of care, what options would be acceptable, what options would not be acceptable. Those things are quite useful in terms of doing teleconferencing.
Okay, and with COVID-19, Dr. Ednin, we know it's going to be in the community for at least the next year. We don't know if a vaccine will even come out in the next 18 months. What are the risks to patients under palliative care because of this pandemic? Do you think this is going to go on? What is your advice on the best way to manage patients who need palliative care?
I think this really is a sad aspect. So certainly when you're looking at the evidence out there, many of our patients, for example, with cancer, have got a higher risk patients with organ failure, they have higher risk of succumbing to COVID-19. And I think that's where it becomes a problem. How are these patients being seen in the issue of the pandemic? In the preventative model that we are having to ensure that the curve is flattened, that the risk to the public is reduced, what we are concerned about is the care to existing patients is not being delivered in the same way, especially for cancer patients, I would have to say. Many of our cancer patients, for example, they are generally okay with it because they are already facing a situation where they do not know what the future holds for them. So in a sense, they already, in a way, have come to terms in terms of, I hope that my cancer would be improved, but they also know that there are significant risks with COVID at the moment. I think what we're now seeing is that there is a whole community effect of what it means to be ill and how do we care for our vulnerable. I think there are both micro and macro aspects of how COVID affects the community. It's how we now value the people that we have. So I would hope that there is better provisions for care, palliative care patients, both in hospital and in the community.
When you talk about micro and macro issues, do you want to give me some examples?
I think that when I'm at the bedside, when I'm talking to a patient, they fear suffering. They do not want to die in pain. They do not want to die in isolation. So many of our patients at the moment, when faced with, do I want to go to hospital? They know that the protocol ensures that they will be isolated. Their friends and their family can't visit them. So many of our patients are choosing to stay at home, regardless of what's happening to them, because that social contact with family is so important. Yeah. And we're now seeing this in other parts of the world, that some patients are choosing to stay at home instead of going to hospital. And where I'm looking at is that what palliative care does is that we could help those in hospital to have better communication skills so that they can provide better social, psychological support to patients with COVID in hospitals. Because that's the one thing that I see lacking, that patients are dying in hospital in isolation. They are unable to say goodbye to their family. Whereas at home, they are being able to do that. People can discuss risks, what is acceptable and what is not acceptable. Some patients, for example, have said under no circumstances would they want to be ventilated. So there are discussions done at the bedside, at the patient discussion. What we haven't seen would be a discussion more about advanced care planning within the community. Would we respect what patients and families want? I think in the midst of a macro response to COVID, we are dealing with rapid responses, trying to do things really quickly, impulsively, without sometimes thinking about the other aspects of care. I think we are now seeing very much the whole discussion about quantity and quality of life in the community. The ones that are focusing on quantity of life is saving lives at all costs, whereas the other ones are saying in the context of economic deprivation, we don't have a life anyway. So I think it's quite interesting to juxtaposition both what I see at the bedside to what is happening out there in the community.
And how do we help these patients through that or sort of come to terms with to some sort of understanding? You know, you spoke about how you probably die and it's isolated. You feel isolated when you're in hospital at this stage because, as you said, you can't have family visit and you know, friends visit. They feel they're better off at home. What's the downside to that, Dr. Ednin?
I think that the main thing the two values I like to look at is respect and honesty. Many of the patients I deal with are happy to talk about things in an honest way, to respect them for who they are, the values that they hold. and to be transparent in providing information to them and guiding them to make the choices that they feel underpin the values that they hold for. What is it that's important for them? So it's been helpful that we could sometimes help arrange communication between patients and loved ones that is done in an honest way. Things that may not have been said before could be said, trying to deal with regrets, with hope and wishes that sometimes people are afraid to say. So I think that just simply by communicating their fears and anxiety, coupled with providing hope of certain things that can be better, I think can certainly be helpful to patients and families. For example, I had a patient that was unable to see his mother because his mother was hundreds of kilometers away. And then guiding them to a video conference of how they could have a really, really meaningful conversation despite not being able to see each other. That's something which I think can be done. We need to improve our communication skills.
And now that the MCO is sort of relaxed, it's now a CMCO, but can patients or can family members or friends sort of start visiting or helping out? Is there a way at all in doing this?
I think it's already starting.
Oh, great. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? I'm not terribly sure, actually.
I don't know. I don't know. I think that even in the last few weeks, certainly people are sometimes still visiting each other despite the MCO because they feel that they need to. I think from my perspective, we are still trying to ensure we be as safe as possible. I think that's the overriding thing, is that even though we have the CMCO, I'm not entirely convinced that we're out of the woods yet, and we would treat every situation where we see patients and caregivers with some degree of suspicion. And we would still advise our patients and caregivers to just be careful at the moment and to try and maintain as much precautions as possible.
Do you think the MCO has change the way we care for people as a community? Have you seen much changes?
I think we've seen the best and the worst in our communities. We've seen such a huge outpouring of compassion and people wanting to help. I mean, for us, one of the issues we had was of a lack of PPE. We did, you know, masks was just very hard to get. When the MCO started, we had enough masks for a week, and many of the other aspects of PPE we didn't have very much, and we were having great difficulty of acquiring them, and the public stepped in to help us quite a bit, so we are entirely grateful for the public. So there has been certainly very wonderful community responses to each other, but at the same time we also see the worst in some of us. For example, the rise in domestic abuse, the xenophobia against certain groups. So I guess we see, you know, both in the good and the bad, and hopefully the good outweighs the bad aspects of community care. I guess one of the main issues that really I feel that may impact on us and everyone else is the potential economic downturn. And for us, it is that this current situation prohibits or makes it very, very difficult for us to raise funds, and that gradually may impact on operations over a period of time.
Do you have a plan, a contingency plan?
We have a contingency plan, and we are trying to develop different platforms in order to fundraise. But the normal physical ways of fundraising can't happen anymore at the moment. So hopefully this will work out. But we understand that In this kind of situation, everybody will be worse off, generally.
If people want to donate, how would they do that?
They can certainly donate through our website. That will be the easiest thing. The details will be on our website, www.hospicemalaysia.org.
Do you still need PPEs and do you still need masks, for an example?
I think we're okay for the time being. We we put out a call that we needed extra PPEs, and the public has been so very, very wonderful in helping us. So we're okay for the time being. I think what we're now needing is medication for patients. There are some medications which are much more difficult to get at the moment.
And do you hope that will improve going forward?
I'm not sure, actually. There are certainly some medication where there might be a global shortage. So in that case, we are now looking to see what other alternatives to some of the medications that we use that we can actually have. So that might be a small difficulty, because some of the medications that we use are dependent on one or two manufacturers or distributors. And if they have a shortage, we probably can't get it from them.
Okay, and the shortage is due to lack of manufacturing, or is it logistical?
I think it's both. Some of the manufacturers or distributors would probably have a contract mainly with hospitals or Ministry of Health. So smaller organizations will have will lower down in terms of their priorities. Certain medications, there are starting to be a global shortage because of the pandemic, and every country is wanting to have those medications as well.
Okay. And how's the team at Hospice Malaysia, Dr. Ednin? I think you guys have been soldiering on. You've had your fair share of challenges. I mean, how is the team doing?
I think this is where we have to look at. This is why I feel that when we're talking about social distancing, we're forgetting about the people and the mental health aspect. What we did was that on the first day of the MCO, we had a whole team meeting, and we allowed everyone to say what their fears, their anxiety, and what the issues are. And so we developed our own plan of action, where we created separate teams so that if somebody becomes infected, then it doesn't affect the other team. But what we did was that we had people keep individual diaries on how they were coping. We also did journaling with team members on reflective journaling for them to think about what each week brings to them. And we discussed this as a team. And that developed camaraderie between everyone, and that we're all in this together. We're not working by ourselves. And that's where the support of each team member has been actually wonderful. And everyone feels that this is something they really want to do. And one of the things I said is that the front line is actually the community. They work in the community, the public, and the guys in hospital, they are the last line of defense.
Would you have a message for us of COVID-19 and how that's changed palliative care?
Yes. What has been mentioned a lot is stay at home, stay safe. What hasn't been mentioned is the third part of it. Be kind to yourself, to people around you, and to everyone in the community.
Thank you, Dr. Ednin, and the team at Hospice Malaysia for soldiering on, and, you know, for being there for caregivers, for patients who are undergoing palliative care. Thank you very much for sharing your thoughts with us today. Dr. Ednin Hamza, CEO of Hospice Malaysia, speaking to us about COVID-19 and palliative care on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.